I can barely hear you, Derek. I know you're talking. What did you say?
No, no. I said the choice of music was a bit hairy.
A bit what? Hairy?
Hairy.
Yeah, it's Barrow Sanders. It's free jazz. 60s.
No, I know. I actually recognize the style.
I was once told you were a reggae fan. Barry Nevitt told me you had a great reggae collection.
Yes, well, I wasn't really a great one, but I certainly did like reggae. It was Ray Peter Tosh was my favorite, and then he got killed.
Yes, and I walked around with the night that he was killed. I was with the major reggae people at CKLN. It was a Friday night, so I walked up the street with them as forget the main guy, and Milton Blake. They were commiserating over what happened, and I was talking to him with my theories about it. So, yes, I have a strong memory for the night that was announced, Peter Tosh.
Yeah. I remember being at a concert at the Hummingbird Center, which was then called, I forgot what name, and there was a police cordoning people, especially the front row where I was, who were smoking dope. It was really funny because he was smoking an enormous spliff and was handing it down to the front row. I got a bit of it, but he got really stoned. It was funny to see the cordoning of the police on one side and then the resistance of all the stoned people on the other, that in the most formal place called Hummingbird Center.
Yes, I remember that.
That was fun.
Well, you had a better night than I did. I just had an intellectual discussion with them. I didn't get stoned. Okay.
Oh, is that where they had the ayahuasca healing joint?
No. Maybe now. Maybe now. We're talking 30 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was like 6 months before he was killed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Derek. You begin where you want to.
Okay. Well, hello, Ion. By the way, Ion is an interesting name. Hi. It's an interesting name you've got, Ion, because the Greeks used to use the same word for eternity, eons.
Right.
And it was written Ion with alpha, iota, omicron, and nu.
Would that be A-E-O-N?
That became A-E-O-N, but it was written with A-I-O-N
in
Greek.
Yeah, and I have a book. Where Carl Jung wrote an essay on Ion, and it might be spelled A-I-O-N. I'll look that up.
There you are. Well, yeah, it should be. It's worth seeing because the correspondence is very interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, let's start there. An ion is a particle.
Well, no. Ion is the space. Ion is the space in the cell. You have the nucleus, and then you have the outer wall, the valence of the cell, the space in the midst of it, the empty space. That's the ion or the ionosphere.
Ah, okay, great. So the space itself is a field, or is it neutral?
No, it's a field. It's a field. It's positively charged. That's why you're saying it's a particle, and that would be correct, the space. Because, see, if you took all the humans in the Earth, there's a lot of humans here now, they say. Well, there seems to be less and less humans every day now, but that's another construct that we can develop if you want to. It's all jiggy with it. But if you took all of the humans on the Earth and you took the space out of their cells, you took just the nucleuses of their cells, you could fit every human on the planet and compressed into the size of a sugar cube. Now, granted, it would be a superiorly dense sugar cube, but every human would fit in the size
like a black
of a sugar
hole.
Cube compacted. Well, it would just be, that's what they would fit. It wouldn't be a black hole. It's what they would fit to. Those cells, they're so nothing. The space is what makes them voluminous. The ion is what makes them fill, you see. And you can prove that because you can take a magnifying glass at the right strength and you can see through your hand. You can see through those spaces. That's how X-ray works. It goes between the spaces. And that's why they, when they do their MRIs and PET scans and that which they do with and without contrast, is they're impeding it with other things that would give the light a different perspective through the empty parts. Sort of the window to the soul.
That's amazing. But that would mean that at the micro level, at that nano, even femto level, whatever you call it, the patterns of the outer space are being somehow fractals of them, or are, the proportions are similar, if not the same.
Well, that depends on the telomeres of the cell. When you have RNA in your cell strata base, now everybody used to talk about DNA, and Dr. Dean started talking about RNA, and now they only exclusively talk about ribonucleic acid, but that's all the rudge, and now everything that's made, it's good if it has RNA on the label, which is quite ridiculous, as you know. It's like an organic sticker. They put an organic sticker, it came out of the same shit dirt. If they put an organic sticker on it, they can charge more money for it because it says it's organic. That's just because those stickers cost so much, apparently. But the point of the RNA, it gives the cell new information. And so between your polypeptide bonds and how the bonds within the striations of the double helix strands in the cell, it's when it tells it to cut off, and that seals it. So the valence and valence, the inside and outside wall, it's what seals it. But you got to get the new information to the cell, which changes it and evolves and opens that up into what we say is a perfect cell, or it's an example of ascension. But that's a little different construct, but it does go to the space that allows your body or meat sac to shift and change. It's all done through one particular chromosome, chromosome 14. It's the only chromosome that has rings and arms.
But that, I always understood RNA to simply be the messenger, you know, entity coming out of the DNA.
It could be, you may call it a messenger, but if you change it, does it change the message? See? So it's the new information that shifts the body or shifts the cellular strata, that as long as the telomeres, it affects the telomeres that makes the cells longer so they don't cut off and replicate. So then the DNA is the only reason you'd use DNA is to find out who the baby daddy is.
But, you know, I once made the comparison of literacy, particularly the alphabetic literacy, as the RNA of any kind of existing
circumstances. And that's great. That'd be the DNA from the alphabetical standpoint. The RNA would be which language it's in. Perfect. Very good. Gurdjieff did that too, you know.
Oh, good. Well, I've had a bunch of questions, but my first one about where are we now a week later? We're a week later from the last talk.
Here's where we are. The Pope, God's representative on the earth to all the Catholics, sits in St. Peter, the fisherman's square, all alone. With the orbs in place, declaring Bob Rule. Lockdown Bob Rule. He explained that the door was not closed, that this was an imperfect world, that they sit in lockdown now, and with a talisman, he hopes to break this onerous plague that has befallen God's children. Interesting. But the good news is he didn't lock the vault from downstairs. So that's good, because that was the deal, because that was a deal breaker. It was going to fall if he did. And it was his to lose, but he's made it welcome. So it's all good. We'll see how it goes. That's one aspect that's important. And we're not trampling anything, but we'll tell you. Don't think we won't tell you. Like it, don't like it, it's okay. We say a lot of things. It's okay. You'll get over it. It's pretty easy after a little while. And it's fun because now, see, it's taking a little heat. It's easy now because it's kind of like shooting fish in a barrel when you have people's actual lives on the line and there's nothing they can do from this inky, misty darkness that's sloping around, that everybody has already got it. Now they're dragging it home to make sure they lay it in their house to get it again. It's quite ridiculous. And it's interesting, though, that the only way that you can increase the chance of living is to test more people. So the more people you test, the more people that's got it, and the less people have died yet. So it makes your chances of survival great, as long as they test a lot of people. Because if they only test two and one of them dies, you got a 50% chance of mortality. It's pretty interesting. And then it's fun.
So it's all a game of numbers and not of any. Yeah.
No, we're sorry. We digress.
Well, that's a bit like the Well, what you're talking about is a bit like Schrodinger's cat, right? Dead or alive in the box until you open it.
Until you open it. But you have to acknowledge that there's a cat in the box to open it. See, this is a cat in the box you didn't know was a cat. See? That's the difference. No one saw this
that's
coming.
Another great.
We said, good, hold on 1 second. We've been saying for months. That y'all get yourself together because it won't be long. It'll be a short window here in a bit where they'll be, what you going to do when they run up down the streets? Like we're making fun of the Monty Python Holy Grail where they have the cart. And they're saying, bring out your dead, bring out your dead, bring it. And they bring a fella who isn't dead and they're carrying him and they try to put him on the cart. He said, he's not dead yet. He says, I'm perfectly fine. Yes, he's stone cold. And he'll be dead in just a minute. He takes him, finally they just whack him in the head with a pipe and throw him on the pile. Quickly, that's what de-evolution has brought you to at this stage of the game. Because life is fragile, but it's fleeting unless you embrace the process of ascension. That's the rub. And I say that's what Marge, now you knew Marge, Marge Stewart, she did best of all. She captured that assimilation. She captured that assimilation. Now, she was just supposedly a secretary, but we give her much more credit because she was deserved, well deserved. But the point is that she captured that essence, that the word was appropriate, but it wasn't the driver because that was feckish. It would shift. It would change. If the wind blew a different way, oh, we got to have this. Oh, we got to have that. Oh, we can't have this. Oh, we jokingly laughed earlier in the show this evening that now they have turned the Me Too movement, the hashtag Me Too. It's not Me Too. It's except for me. Now it's except for me because now they're all dying quickly. Instead of the me also, they're trying to get out of that meme very quickly because the winds blow a little different way. And it's pretty fun. This has just begun, though. It's just beginning. Just beginning.
Yes, that's what I thought. Now, what about the American response to it and the whole scene? Because it's now the whole thing is moving to the United States.
Oh, it's terrible. New York, all in California and New York are just all but doomed. But we told folks to get out of New York and California a couple of years ago because that'll be kind of a ground zero. A lot of cleaning to do. There's a lot of comeuppance, if you know what that means, the comeuppance, that these different industries are pushing things. We've laughed and talked about how before, the airlines put another row of seats and another row of seats and another row of seats. Now you can sit anywhere you want to. There's no place if the damn thing is flying. And now jet fuel is $1 a gallon. You can go get there just right. But there's nobody on a plane, so nobody's complaining anymore about that. Dr. Dean is against the death. Well, she wrote The Death by Modern Medicine is against all the antibiotics, which, of course, come from China. Not anymore. They're not making anything anymore. It's that's kind of ceased a bit. So she says now people, if they live through this, will actually get to live a little longer without an antibiotic every time you have a sniffle, which is ridiculous. But then it goes into the Bob at a condition where people were always busy and they couldn't do what they were supposed to do the homework for Bob's ever-resonant zeitgeist that he portrays. And it's great fun because now they have nothing else but to do but to engage. And they have lots of archives, a couple of 30,000 hours of archives they can listen to all the time while they're sitting in their hovels. We said long ago to make your house very wonderful because you never know when it might become your prison. So if you have a really nice house, lockdown's not so bad because it's very comfortable if you make your space right, you see. It's good to have an extra refrigerator full of groceries when you're hungry.
Well, about that, it could very well happen that before this is over, there'll be no more food available.
Well, that depends on if they allow it to roll. See, at some point, the quarantines are going to become, because we'll give New York as an example. We know it's a glib, clichéable archetype. We get it. It's a cool medium, as Marge would note it. It's a cool medium. Because now they've got everybody in New York. Everybody was fleeing New York, and they're dragging the disease everywhere. Well, now they want to quarantine New York so that they can't New York. New Jersey and probably some of Connecticut where you can't move. So now they're stuck. They got to stay there. They got to stay in their spit. So as long as those trucks can go in with the food, no problem. The second that's broken or when the drivers say, you know what, I've had enough, I'm done, then it's over. The same way that the mayor, your dear Cuomo mayor of New York City, demands 30,000 ventilators, and of course we're going, okay, who's going to run those 30,000 ventilators? You don't have that many people. You have that many people working. You don't have 100,000 beds in all of New York. And you've got to have 30,000 ventilators. It's just ridiculous. So they're going to rig it up and hook it up till they die off, and they're just trying to slow down the spike so they have enough space to let the people die. But they've arranged it. They got the trucks and coming by to pick up the dead, because nobody wants to handle the dead people because they're eat up with the corona. COVID-19, sorry, it's more.
Well, the same thing is happening in Bergamo, in Italy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you know, it's not fair.
We've got the same problem
as really
the army.
Sure, sure. It's not really
so
fair because Italy...
Do you have any kind of prognostication? No, I know. But do you, when you look at it from above, then you have that possibility, do you see any time frame, how long it's going to last, how many people will die? Do you have any idea of that?
The number of dead is going to be incredible. And the time frame, originally this was supposed to be a nothing thing. This was not supposed to be, it was supposed to be another form of Zika. We've done a couple of these. There's seven different layers of this. You had SAR and MER, not the MRSA. That was a little bit different, but you had seven layers of this corona-leveled disease or bug, viral bug. Let's call it like that. But instead what happened is the humans got a hold of this one, and they morphed it into a new thing, and that's when it was the coronavirus. Now it's COVID-19 because it merged. It's now viral and bacterial, which has never happened before. And that's why they're really scared, because it's staying on hard surfaces for, gosh, 8 days easy, and some 21 days. Well, now you just blew. And we said that the incubation period was always 21 days when they were saying 7. Now they're saying 14, and it's still wrong. So the people are going back and forth as they're kind of going with it. So it just builds and builds and builds and builds and builds. And the proof's in the pudding, because they use a quinine-based malaria drug for the viral part, and then they're using Z-Pak or zithromycin, which is for the bacterial part. and it kind of binds both sides, tries to patch it at both sides. And it's giving some relief, but it's happening so quick because they've built such a head of steam about it. It's kind of like the stock markets are the Chicken Little, and the sky is falling, and the next thing you know, it starts raining. So the sky really is falling. Well, it is. And that's what happens with markets, and that's what happens to memes. And the medium is the message, however glib. Then what happens is people are judged by that xenocracy. And when that happens, they have no choice but to die. And so they choose to. See?
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone died on the Titanic, but most of them went to bed and accepted their fate.
Hmm. Now, that's interesting, too. And I think probably something that's happening now. I don't know. We're here in the south of Italy, and there's nothing happening now. But there's,
We know.
There's nothing happening now, but there are chances of it happening anyway.
Well, yeah. And yet, you got 10,000 dead today. Well, your total is like bumping over 10,000 now.
It is, yeah. It is. Oh, well, I actually am not afraid of dying. It's not a problem. I'm sort of sorry about it, but I'm also interested.
You're eternal.
Very interesting.
You're eternal, yeah. So there's nothing to worry about. That's right. That's exactly right. Now, we say rather than dying, you have another alternative. If you follow the Catholic Church, then you would want to ascend. You are in the created in the image of Christ, and so as a joint heir with Christ, if you would engage in intinction and you would change your blood to the blood of Christ and the body of Christ with bread of life and living water, then your body can shift and change just as it did with Jesus on the Emmaus Road. Well, and that's the only reason for Jesus to ascend. And then, of course, the Catholic Church says brilliantly that Jesus is coming back to fetch his bride. Well, Jesus certainly isn't a pedophile, for Pete's sake. The necrophilia people aren't into that. So it's a mature bride, which means that you come into your place of power, ascend, and then you can engage. So you carry on your eternity in this realm. So we agree. And that's in your world, you see. We comply. It's all good. We may go a little further with it, Mr. Corso. That's a reference from the movie Ninth Gate. kind of fun to play with as we go.
It is fun. You're Mr. Class.
We've had a little too much croaker already tonight, can you tell?
Yes, I see. I can hear you. Oh well,
Arthur Croker.
I know Arthur Croker. He's a good guy, yeah. Though, you know. Did you ever talk to him?
You're so kind. You're very kind.
Yeah, Arthur hardly talked to me, let alone Ion.
he wouldn't talk to you?
Well, we were friends, but when Mary Louise got sick, he wouldn't talk much, and he's totally nowheres now since she passed away a couple of years ago. I think it was May 2018, so C-Theory even got shut down. C-Theory got shut down. Let me just say this, Ion. I just so it's heard, C-Theory has stopped. Stopped just before Mary Louise died, and unless it opened today, he's not doing anything right now.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I remember seeing three. I know that I haven't read anything on it since she died.
Okay, you can talk.
I wrote to the author. Go for it.
Yeah, go back to what you were saying, Ian.
Oh, no, we were just vamping on that he's under the delusion that you, Bob, are stalking him.
Thompson said they all think I'm stalking him.
Yeah, I know.
Marshall thought that a little bit.
Well, you were him, but it was really Marge is what you were trying to get a fait au complete.
And we became good friends.
Well, she knew you were the deal.
That's right. She did.
And look at the coach house today.
And her husband.
Look at the coach house today.
It's emptied of its contents.
Well, of course, it's
but that was Eleanor
McLuhan. It's post Mary McLuhan. So what do you expect?
That's what do you think? Mary McLuhan was a good defender of the of its continuance.
What?
I don't think
no,
so. She hated me for being
gone.
Director of the film.
She wanted it gone. That's what we're saying. It's in the condition
yes.
It's in now because of post-Mary McLuhan. If she wasn't sleeping with Mr. Brown or Marshall, she she was running it down as all she could. Yeah. Happiest day she ever had was when Eric finally
yeah, she
went
was,
to
she,
the ground.
She was very thankful with me anyway.
She was thankful with most. She loved Bob, and then she hated Bob, and then she'd scream at Bob. Then she'd have a little too much cooking sherry, and then she'd love Bob, and then she'd hate Bob. And then she'd get into the bonbons and all the champagne if she was entertaining someone of notable worth to give her some money to give some education about education. I think the education motif was to raise money so you could have education. That was the money-raising campaign of raising money for the education. We don't know. It kind of got a bit circular after a little bit. As long as there was money in her coffers to run her sherry consumption, all was very well. She had old Jerry on the hook, though. So
she was very strange.
Yeah, Jerry Brown.
But, you know, Terry has been writing to me.
No,
who's been writing to
the
you?
Smart one. Terry, the smart one, the
Terry.
Movie
yes,
star.
Yes.
Terry, the movie star.
Terry's looking for allies, Derek. She won't dare write to
anybody.
Me. And I'm the person they all should write to. But the thing is that she's getting isolated. I don't think
yeah.
she's got much connection with Sharma and the new feminist.
They're all dead. Bob, they're all dead. Everybody's dead.
Yes, that's right.
You're going to let Michael, Michael run something? He can't even run his own affairs. How's he going to do anything?
Dead us all. Yep. No, they're all dead.
For sure.
Well, Terry and I have always had a reasonably stable relationship. It has always been friendly and helpful, helpful on my side usually from the start, but at least friendly and stable. One time I had a fight with her, only once. It was really memorable. We were in a restaurant in Paris, and we were all eating together. We were about five or six people around the table. And at what point she said something and her face moved in such a way that I said, oh, Terry, it's amazing how much you are like your father. She stood up in absolute fire, fury.
No.
She was just,
she was so
angry.
She
said, don't you ever say that again.
Yeah.
She didn't throw the wine in my face, but she was pretty close.
Now, you know what happened. You know what happened.
Very much.
Corinne had issue after issue after issue after issue. Well, Mary was the favored one, but the advances for Terry wouldn't have it. But she did not want to have anything to do with the zeitgeist of Papa. It was far beneath her.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she would
That's very
never
accurate,
be
Derek.
Done.
That's very Eric.
She would never
Whenever she
be,
was interviewed for her films, hey, Ian, let me interject. Whenever she was interviewed to support what you're saying about her films, she made it clear that she had nothing to do with her father.
Yeah, I know. But I didn't realize that, and I was helping her in organizing her apartment in Paris. She needed an intermediary. And so we were, you know, we saw each other there. I was often in Paris. I would, you know, negotiate in French the various things I had to do with people who were contracting to redo her place. So we were in a kind of a non-business. This was all friendly. But that's the only time we had a fight was because I mentioned that. But I had never realized to what extent she was against her father. And now I recognize that what you're saying is very useful. Yes, there's Mary on one side and Terry on the other. No wonder she made a film about twins.
Is this your 83 conference with Adrian Clarkson you're talking about, 1983 going into 84, when you were with Terry?
You could be. It could be.
Yeah, because you weren't that active in Paris. You weren't in Paris all the time. That was one of the few times you were.
Yes. I'm not active in Paris now, and I haven't been for a long time. But in those days, I was there quite a few because I was connected with the Canadian Cultural Center in Paris.
Yes.
And they helped me to organize a conference called McLuhan and Orwell in 1984, which was published, in fact, into the proceedings were published. Not very well, but they're there. They're
I was promoting them on the McLuhan list 2 weeks ago. They didn't know about it.
Yeah. No, it's very. I don't think I have a copy of it in digital form, but I invited Theo to that conference. He came. I remember having dinner with him at a tiny restaurant not far from where I was living, and all of us discussing with the cook about the fact that the most important food in the world was Chinese because you had, you know, a billion people. At that time, not a billion yet, but close to a billion people, and they would be very unhappy if they didn't have good food, which was a stupid comment. But the cook was saying that all recipes for different kinds of countries and cultures came from Chinese food.
Who said that?
The cook who was actually king.
Yeah.
It was a great restaurant, and the Theals, both husband and wife, were there with us, and we were talking about, you know, how good the food was, so we brought the cook over, and the cook described to us that his inspiration was Chinese food, although there was nothing Chinese about the food we were getting. It was truly French. But he said, no, it's come from Chinese origins because all recipes come somehow from Chinese origins. So it's interesting, this question of Chinese food and, you know, Chinese, what did he call that? Yeah, Trump? The Chinese virus.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, listen to this, Derek. Too. So Theo and his wife were in China in 74. They were, let me finish, Ian. They were the first to be invited from Canadian academia to China. That's because he had a leftist reputation. But at your dinner, did you have Barry Nevitt and William Irwin Thompson? Were they with you?
Yeah, that dinner, no, but they were at another one. Yes, we didn't have room for everybody, but I had invited Thompson and also invited Zinoviev, Alexander Zinoviev, who was the sort of double agent who came in and out of Russia at the time and who had written about the Russian communism fall, which actually he predicted and actually really did happen. It was called in French Les Hauteurs Béantes. The gaping heights, not Wuthering Heights, the gaping heights.
Yeah.
Les Hauteurs Béantes. That was his book, and he was really brilliant. He was very interesting. He had a face like Beethoven and the body of a dwarf.
Did you know that Gorbachev had a vault with his McLuhan books?
Really?
Yes. And
not
Corinne.
Bad.
Corinne got a letter from him explaining that, and then I met Gromyko's assistant's daughter in New York City, and she grew up the circles close to Brezhnev and around Gromyko and Brezhnev, and she had McLuhan books in her vault, and she got caught and got in trouble as a late teenager reading McLuhan.
Hmm.
So wow. It was banned.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Of course it was banned. Speaking of which, during the week, intervening between our last meeting, I came across a very, very interesting piece of writing by a man called Chris Hedges.
I know him.
About the breakdown. You know him?
Yeah.
Well, he's a very intelligent man. Do you know that? If you want, I can send you the paper I I read, it is the most brilliant explanation of why Trump is in power, why Hillary didn't deserve to be in it, why he doesn't any more than her. But at least he broke through something that was really rotten that I think started with the murder of Kennedy.
Good point. No, I'd like to see that. And, you know, Bob Dylan just released his new masterpiece. He hadn't done a new song in 8 years. And he yesterday released his song about the history of the baby boomer top points in the media, but all around the Kennedy assassination. That was the focal point.
Yes, and you know, the second part, very near the beginning of the song, which I have heard and listened to carefully, he says, "And we've already got somebody to replace you."
Yes, yes.
Which is, of course, Lyndon Johnson. And I don't know where you think, and that's a good question to Ion. Do you think Lyndon Johnson had something to do with that?
Well, of course.
Yeah,
and
of course.
We'll
that's
leave
what
Margaret,
I feel.
We'll
so
Margaret,
what I'm saying
we'll
then...
Margaret out of it.
Yes, there's a very controversial explanation Ian did recently on who initiated the Kennedy assassination, but Ian is careful about talking about it. You'll be very surprised. He just said the name. He just said the name Margaret. That's the hint. Margaret. Not Margaret Stewart, but Margaret.
No.
Here's what we're just saying. Kennedy... Oh, did you know that Bob Dylan in Spin magazine in 1985, he was asked, what about the 60s? How does our generation learn about the 60s? He said, read Norman Mailer and Marsha McLuhan.
Wow.
Good. Bob Dylan, 1985. He knows.
Good choice. Okay, but here's my reasoning, Bob and Aeon. I know that Aeon doesn't want to talk about it in particular, but I'd like to hear both your opinions about my theory that it took a lot of people to hush down. It took, first of all, Jack Ruby to kill Oswald and then somebody to make sure Jack Ruby was dead. In order to do that, you need to alert a great number of people, and the only person who has enough power and enough friends to be able to do that has to be somewhere at the top. And surely Kennedy did not order his own murder. So the one who did is the next in power. One who was told that he wouldn't be chosen as vice president for the next election. He had been told that the day or the 2 or 3 days before.
Yeah. But see, this was all set up. This was about Barry Goldwater more so than that. That's the outside. That's the outcast. The inside was this faux Camelot that had been boasted. See, that was the whole rub. I mean, because normal America had a hard time even embracing Catholicism in those days, let alone a Democrat, you see, because Democrats were different then than they are now. You had to go back, do you know Strom Thurmond? That was a whole other zeitgeist that they were living in at that time. So,
you know Strom Thurmond, Derek?
No, I don't. What did he do and where was he?
He was the head of the KKK faction, you could say, in the Capitol. He lived about 99 years old. He was the longest congressman, senator. He was the power that went after Martin Luther King, probably Robert Kennedy. He was, you know, quote, the icon of evil.
Ralph Nader was never afraid of anything in his work. Ralph Nader was never afraid of anyone or anything except for Strom Thurmond.
And John Lennon also. Strom Thurmond went after John Lennon.
Yep.
After John Lennon... Listen to this. After John Lennon paid for the publication of Mae Brussel, and in 1988, Mae Brussel died, so I got a hold of Mae Brussel and Marsha McLuhan through the Evergreens, the ghosts, so to speak. And I asked Marshall, did he talk to Mae? And he said, yes. What did you talk about? And he said, I congratulated Mae Brussel because she was the closest on the Kennedy assassination.
Wow.
And Mae Brussel, read her, you'll find out Well, the important part of J. Edgar Hoover, more than what most people think.
Huh. Well, we don't give Hoover that much credit, because this becomes a little way to run power. It's a power train. You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I do dirty things, so I'm going to get the dirt on everybody else's dirt, so I'm going to feed the dirt, and if you don't participate, I'll have your taxes run you to death, kind of thing. So, you know, that is the Democratic Party, that left. That's Watergate. That's all the deans. Tell them how many deans there are, Bob.
There's a lot of them, but the one you're talking about is John Dean.
Yeah,
but
right close to Howard Dean.
I will tell you who Ion says was involved with the Kennedy assassination at the core point someday privately, Derek. It's very controversial. But Ion knows. After every 22,000 hours, Ion is usually never wrong, unless he intends to be wrong in public so that we can't appear 100% right all the time, because that's when the NSA gets involved. How do you people know everything? Blah, blah, blah. See? So Ion will strategically place mistakes. But when you get past that privately, you find out a lot with Ion. But let's go to your aperture. I want you to get your question. Aperture science. Let's go to your list there.
Yes. Yes. What is aperture science?
Sightedness. Aperture science is the field that includes the sighted elemental condition that offers an empirical hypothesis that is answerable, or that is solvable, or that can with great laud be concluded.
How does that relate to McLuhan's idea of visual space, Ion?
It doesn't. It doesn't. He wasn't visual.
That's true. So
he was always
your sightedness has a different meaning.
Well, sighted because we know things, and sometimes the things we know aren't sighted, but they're sightable, like your the Kirchhoff would have a sighted reference, a reference.
Yeah.
That's sightedness.
Oh, okay, so you don't just mean S-I-G-H-T, you also mean C-I-T-E-D in that sentence.
Exactly,
so note that, Derek.
That's exactly correct. Because if you're going to drag that into it, you know, how are you ever going to validate LaRouche? Poor Linden. If that be the case.
LaRouche. What is LaRouche?
Lyndon LaRouche.
Lyndon
Bob
LaRouche.
Logan knows about Lyndon LaRouche. He was a.
You don't get out much, do you?
Well, Derek's a European and Canadian, so he certainly wouldn't
well,
run across LaRouche.
How much closer to the Queen? How much closer to the Queen of England can you get than LaRouche?
Well, I guess Derek didn't focus on the Queen too much, but Lyndon LaRouche was a former Trotskyist who went sort of right-wing, in simple terms, a very good thinker about Karl Marx. He did some good books on it, and then he developed a cult, and he ran for president every 4 years, and no one knew where he got his money, though later I found that he got it from the Vatican. The Vatican funded him, and he was a very controversial person, but up there with Mae Brussels on who was doing what to who. He had an international journalistic network. And it goes on and on, but he's well known among your lefty friends, Derek. He threatened them.
It's a LaRouche, L-A, not L-E.
Right, L-A, capital R-O-U-C-H-E, Lyndon LaRouche.
I got you. What was the name of the other person you mentioned that that Ralph Nader was afraid of?
Strom, that's S-T-R-O-N, the male Strom, S-T-R-O-M, Thurmond, T-H-U-R-M-O-N-D, Strom Thurmond. And the third name.
H.
Yeah, no, Strom, S-T-R-O-M is his first name. Then Thurmond, T-H-U-R-M-O-N-D.
And then the second?
Thurmond. Thurmond.
Thurmond.
Yeah.
Thurmond.
Right.
Wow.
And the third name...
Never heard about her.
Yeah, well, listen to this. The third one is Mae Brussel. M-A-E, capital B-R-U-S-S-E-L-L. Now, she grew up... If you ever heard of the West Coast Macy's called I.G. Magnin, she was a Magnin, grew up in Beverly Hills. Her father was the rabbi for the Jewish world in Hollywood. So she grew up with Einstein and the Warner Brothers and every other famous Jewish person in her home.
And Yakko,
oh,
Wacko,
wow,
and
wow,
Doc.
Wow. That's all news to me.
What, Ian?
And Yakko, and Yakko, Wacko, and Dot.
Are you talking about Yakko, the guy who started Zionism?
No, we're talking about we're talking about the important part, Bob, the Animaniac, the best of the Warner
Brothers. Oh, yeah, the Animaniac. Yeah. Ian is very McLuhan-esque. He'll bring in pop culture on any theme, Derek.
Yes, I can see that. All right, let's get back to the questions, and where are they?
Good questions.
Yeah, one very nice thing is number four. You're looking for a city where you'll never die. You're trying to apply a larger sentiment, a larger place of power that can control the new environment. So explain what the larger sentiment is, please.
Oh, it's not. It's not. It's the complete. It's the completement. It's where you have room to become into your place of power. So now the scriptures, if you're using empirical, now we include the Apocrypha, you may or may not, but we would include the Apocrypha in the dynamic that gives a picture or a window so that you can become God. Remember, Canaan land was supposed to be paradise, or that was the land of milk and honey, but they were afraid to cross the River Jordan, those ancient Samaritan Hebrewloids, however limiting. They were afraid to cross the River Jordan because there were giants in the land. See, so here's another picture put up to say that you can't have this promised land. So you're looking for a city. This is, he's quoting the Vestal Goodman reference of Where You'll Never Die. It's a hymn song that's very amazingly laid out, telling this contrived condition of seeking a city outside of this realm where you are God, where you are in your place of power. Mansions on the hillside, or streets are paved with gold and that kind of stuff, which is appropriate. So your question is, what is the elemental condition that allows a larger space or a spance that allows you to be God? That's the space that gives room, even with the giants, that can be consumed. Did that answer your question?
Well, it does, and it reminds me of something I read a long time ago in Carlos Castaneda, The Road to Power, where he said everybody has to find his spot.
Well, and the spot, now there were three of those, well, there's a bunch of them, but some of them not so good and some okay, but they feed themselves. See, when you have to have a devil to prove there's a God, we have trouble, you see, because Dante didn't do a very good job of it, and Moses had a hard time living through it. And Daniel didn't think very much of it, and poor Job there survived it by the skin of his teeth. So unless you're Amos or Malachi trying to raise an army or a capitulated form of a wealth-bearing savior, you have a little bit of a problematic issue from that side. So we won't beat it to death, but we're just trying to give an elemental construct that it can allow you to have any space, that it gives room for the marriage supper of the Lamb. That's what people talk about tremendously, the know. And then the physical aspects of the bodies that change makes a larger representation of you. And that's what Marshall was trying to point out, that this thing you're calling life is ridiculous. It's not appropriate. You don't even know what you're talking about. You're sitting here listening to me. That's why you're fucked up. If you're going to sit here and listen to me, you got troubles. I'm an idiot. Why are you listening to me? Any club that would let me join, I'd never be a part of that. That those people are crazy. That me inside, you see. So he's pointing out that the incredulity of this pie-eyed, mentally stable zeitgeist is supposed to validate something, you see. So that becomes another example of that position. So the point of the paradise or the city is where you'll never die, where you have room to not have to die.
Okay.
Hey, I just wanted to say, Ayn said the three. There were three Don Juans in Carlos Castaneda's life. Now, here's something, Derek, you probably don't know. Who was teaching with Carlos Castaneda at Northridge, outside of Los Angeles, was Ted Carpenter. And Ted Carpenter had the manuscript to Castaneda's first book and gave it to Gerd Stern, who had a friendship with McLuhan, and a lot came out of that. Ted Carpenter was in the middle of a lot of things in the late 60s in Los Angeles.
He was an objectionable person. I remember going all the way to
New York
to interview him, and when I got there, after having spent money and things, he just denied the interview and gave me 40 minutes of just raging against McLuhan, saying that all his ideas had been stolen by McLuhan, and he was just not going to support anything coming out from that man. Then he turned out at his funeral and made a very laudatory homily about him. So, you know, where was that guy?
Yes, we've talked about this before, Derek. I know your story. I had the same experience with Carpenter.
The fifth question. Can we get to the fifth question?
You want us to smote him, Bob?
Maybe Ian's got something. Can you clarify this, Ian? Carpenter-McLuhan relationship?
No, we were asking if you wanted us to smote him. We could smote him if you want to.
No, he's dead. He's already gone.
No, but we can make it where he never existed. We can make it where he never was known.
You're going to erase him from the record, Derek.
We'll rub him from the record. If that'll make you happy, we can do this. We got pull with the big guy. Hey, Derek, we got pull with the big guy. We can pull this off if you want.
Listen, so what if you say the battle is over? Battle is over who's in charge, not over right or wrong. And my question is, how does that apply to bunglers like Trump, Bolsonaro, and Johnson?
Oh, easy. That's the whole battle. Everybody does right things. Everybody does wrong things. The most ridiculous human being on this planet to serve as anything is Donald J. Trump. For Pete's sake, you can't get more ridiculous than he. It's an abomination. He's been everything. He's been an independent. He's been a communist. He's been a Democrat. He's been a Republican, and he's given money to all of them and slept with all their wives and had children with most of their mothers, for Pete's sake. Absolutely the slime of the earth, nothing. He'll buy anything he can buy and robbed all of the Upper East Side. It's the only way there is that part of condition of New York. Yes, he didn't want any of Queens, but everything on this side of the East River was his, and he made sure he killed you till he got it, or made a deal with the bank that the bank would go bankrupt if they foreclosed on you. So, yeah, that's ridiculous. But here's what he did. He came into a position or a picture where he said, I'm going against the administration. I'm going against this. No, it's not. No one voted for Donald J. Trump. Everyone voted against the administration, the swamp. And he tapped in to what used to be working class Democrats that are now Republicans, because now, even if you can't be rich or comfortable or stable or healthy or wealthy, you want the opportunity to. And the Republicans say no more, like Ronald Reagan, no more new government. And then they double the size of the government. He said, okay, good. I'm your president. I'm for you. I'm working with you. I'm doing it. But no more new government. And then he doubled the size of the new doubled government. Before he left, government was the largest employer in the country. he made more government than ever was by saying no more new government. So it made this swamp that everyone knows is ridiculous. They say one thing, and then they get there, and it's not that. And then they say this, oh, well, we'll get it next time. Oh, we'll do this. Now you have a president who made all these ridiculous claims. You know he's a powerful human being when he made CNN say pussy on the air. Anybody that powerful, it's pretty powerful.
Wow.
They gave him over $1 billion worth of airtime because he was a joke. They thought, this is going to be the most fun we ever had. Donald J. Trump's going to run. He came down the escalator in his Trump Tower that the government gave him the money to build the Trump Tower. He actually can't close and secure his building because he gave a leeway that he built it over public property. So his foyer of Trump Tower is actually public domain that anybody can go, can move in and squat there, and there's nothing anybody can do because he got a variance so he wouldn't have to pay taxes on his whole half of the building because it was built on public land. It would be like building your subdivision on a cemetery. It's an allodial title. So, however glib, he's pretty smart when he's trying to save taxes on a skyscraper.
But what you just, you said something that alerts me a little bit, which is kind of interesting. You seem to say that the swamp began with Reagan when I was thinking that it began with Lyndon Johnson. Am I totally wrong?
No. Yes, totally. See, the problem with Lyndon Johnson was a non sequitur. If there was anything that was power, it was Lady Bird. Lady Bird was a force to be reckoned with. And the battle was over the Bouviers more than the Kennedys. The Kennedys were just rum runners. They weren't of value. I mean, they were an underbelly, an underculture, a subculture. And Joe, the drunk, he still gets paid on the scotch that comes into the country. But they weren't anything. They weren't anything of that's why they, for him to be killed, this was the Camelot. This was borrowed from the Bouviers, not from the Kennedys. Kennedys were expendable. Kennedys are still expendable. They're still killing Kennedys. It's no problem. That's what you use up. That's the leftover part, the remnant, as we say. But the Bouviers were the power behind that side. But this is not that. See, when Truman...
Okay, so LBJ brought in a bit of bureaucracy, Ion?
No, he was just a fill-in. He was a Texas boy. Everything great came out of Texas. He was from Texas. Lady Bird was of a good value. She had the halls behind her, and you know who that is. She had the halls behind her.
Reading curves.
And there was enough to carry it over, and he was just the clear and present, we don't want to say choice, but you want a Rockefeller?
And the halls and the halls and Lady Bird Johnson were very good friends with JW's family. Anyway,
sure.
Back to this point.
They married.
Reagan did something different. They married into. Reagan did something different, is what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah, he came in from a progressive thing. Because, see, you live through, after all this fallout, and, okay, here's a pendulum. What you're trying to describe is this swinging pendulum to and fro. They change and they're up. They change and they're down. They change and they're rich. They change and they're poor. They had the embargo, couldn't have any oil. And it's very clear that gas was 37 cents a gallon and they couldn't have any. And then everybody still was, let gasoline get to be $1 a gallon. You can have all you want. You'll never light up again. And that's been the case. No problem, you see. So you're rocking along with this whole Texas tea, oil, China is brewing in the background. Nixon comes as the counterpart of the Johnson regime, which was just the old Strom Thurmond, old South, keep the niggers in the field, Democrats, you see. Now, they had to have the black vote, but they lived in the genre, the culture, that said there was a separation. You see, they endured Martin Luther King. You see, they endured it, and then had James Earl Ray kill him. So there you go. But then, what the problem is, that made him be a martyr. you see. And there's nothing wrong with the Kings. They're good enough. Bernice is all right. Some of them is all right. Some of them. Daddy King was fine. He was nothing wrong with him. He was straight up. But anyhow, setting that aside, those become a thing, which hopefully has passed, but it's come to a place now that it's fun. It's the animation is fun. Because now what happens, you see this flow back and forth. Then you get to Richard Nixon, who's got his pet psychic Dixon in his White House telling him ever blow, but she wasn't good enough to tell him to get out of the way. It's pretty interesting. So as that flows,
Gene Dixon.
He called her Pat.
What about Gene Dixon?
Pretty good psychic that Nixon did everything around what she said. He got very mad at her eventually because she knew more than the CIA, therefore usurped his power.
So you are putting all these women behind his men.
Yes, but listen to this. Nixon wrote to Trump in 87 and said, you should run for president. And Pat Nixon suggested it to Dick, who suggested it to Trump. But the person who told the Nixons that Trump would be president was Gene Dixon.
Yeah.
In 87.
Huh.
And she got that.
But carry on. You're leading.
She got that from Revelation when it said that the last trump of God shall stand.
Ah, that's where she got it from. Okay.
Yep.
But listen, you now move from Nixon, Carter, and Reagan. Go continue your pendulum point.
Okay, now it swings the other way. You've got something rolling. And you're going deeper and deeper and deeper into Brezhnev's xenocracy. Now you go into the Pierce Bush realm. And that's Brezhnev 101. They're in that pocket. You got George, who is hock deep in the dirt. Now he becomes president and tries to run something, or at least College Station. Here we are again, back in the great state of Texas again. And then it flows and catches and flows and catches and flows and catches. And then it moves all the way to the other side where nobody's doing anything. Everything's kind of about the same. You're running up debt, you're running this, you're running that. Except meanwhile, back at the ranch, you're not building anything except for debt. And then it comes to another place where you have to balance that. Now, we're not talking about voodoo economics. We're not talking about that. You live through Ben Bernanke, and then you're moving all the way hard into all of the hillbillies. That's a whole nother mess. That's a whole nother issue from that whole camp. That's trying to bring back the Barry Goldwater White House in an Arkansas elite, if there's such a thing. Isn't that an oxymoron? Because of Hillary, the Rodhams, and all that bullshit with Whitewater. Let's drug it down again. One more time, nastiness that we're exposing. And then Trump walks in after the abomination, and then Trump walks in and says, I'm fuck it. Fuck it. Fuck all this shit. We're throwing them all out. We're going to lock her up. We're going to build a wall. We're going to make America great again. And guess what? I'm going to use rich people. How are you going to tell a country that's having a hard time that you're going to make things great by using rich people? He said, y'all put these poor people in charge of things and give 99,000 people a job that two people could do, paying them a fortune, and everybody's dying on the vine. He said, no, get some rich people that know what it is to let them decide it. And that's what he's done. And then he says, oh, and by the way, I'm going to move the embassy to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. Every president since Jimmy fucking Carter said he was going to do that, but nobody did. He did it in a moment. They said, oh, we need to raise $1 billion to build the embassy. He found a building for $400,000 and converted and did it for $400,000. Not a billion.
He's like, why do we need to do all that? He said, it's Israel. There ain't 11 people in the whole damn country. Move the damn thing. Let's go. What's in Tel Aviv anyway? He wants to blow up Gaza? We don't care. We're going to make outlandish statements like we're going to have peace in the Middle East. Yeah, and then he's sitting there, and they've been fighting for 10,000 years, and he's going to have peace in the Middle East. And he's making it, got rid of Taliban. These ridiculous statements that he's making, he pushes the thing to such a degree that it catches people's notion that they have the opportunity for a potential greatness. All Trump has done is enlarge the capacity, kind of like what we talk about for ascension, and he makes it very bold, very avant-garde, kind of like the way Bob talks. Yeah, I made the world. Yeah, the world belongs to me. Yeah, I started the world. Nobody's in the world that didn't talk to me. Everybody that's anybody that's in my chart, if they're not in my chart, if I didn't say it didn't happen, I'll whoop the man that says it isn't so. That's lockdown Bob rule. But the Pope himself gets in St. Peter's Square and says it in front of everybody. So he can't, you know, what you going to do? Well, what you going to do when the Pope's saying it? So, okay, that's okay so far. So far, so good.
He said lockdown. Your point is he said my word, lockdown, right?
Yeah. And that he didn't lock the door against you coming in the basement and getting what you want. That was the deal breaker. If he'd done that, we'd be having a very different conversation.
If he locked me out, Derek, that would be trouble. Because JW and I were there in the Vatican in 2011, and we were taken to the basement to see the secret artifacts, and JW suddenly said, we want to see room 32 or something like that. And it wasn't JW, it was Ion saying it. And the Cardinal said, what? He was really shocked that we knew about the room. So we went and looked at it, but JW didn't buy anything because he didn't support the Vatican.
Well, we could. Wow. We just haven't had a good reason.
Well,
No.
I've got one more question. Then I have one more question. Then I have to leave it to next week because the population wants me to come and have lunch down there. But the question is this. Last week you said there is no time, which I think this is really an interesting concept, and I think that there's a lot of philosophers today that are actually exploring it. And I was wondering whether that had anything to do with McLuhan saying all pastimes are now, or are we getting back into where time and space are indistinguishable?
No, they're not indistinguishable. What you built or made as a construct of time is a false premise. And the humans are having to serve the false premise. You go to Revelation chapter 1, it says the life that you're living as a little man, the fall from Christ, will serve, you'll have to serve time. But the Revelation chapter 1 says very clearly that very soon, there'll come a time on earth when time shall be no more. So what that means is now that they have the atomic clocks that set every time the same, but yet you have all these different time cycles and daylight savings time and not savings, Greenwich Mean Time and all these different times, it's almost impossible. Now the tech body is scheduling everybody's schedule. It reminds you when to go to bed, reminds you when to drink your whiskey, reminds you when to get up, when to have sex, when not to do all these funk, when to go to the bathroom, what to do. It reminds you. So it's taking that element of time out of it and making everything timing. Just like you have an appointment to reach, that's timing. It doesn't matter when this is. It's when it's pre-designated to engage. The tech body will take care of that, and so therefore it'll become more and more and more of that, just like the tech body now doesn't, you don't have to know how to spell sesquipedalian now because your Black Mirror will spell it for you. You don't have to know what the past pluperfect tense of a verb is because the machine will correct it for you and make it at least appropriate unless you're speaking in the new foreign language of OMG, what's the BFD? By definition, that is communication, isn't it not?
Yes. No, I got it. Yeah.
So that's the fall of time.
What beyond it then? Nothing. I mean, parousia.
We've asked that question 1,000 times. What happened? What happened? What happened to ancient Samaria? The best things in the world that have ever come is from the dynasty of Prussia. Where's Prussia?
What's that got to do with time, Ion?
He asked about Bulgaria.
Oh, did you? Did you say Bulgaria, Derek?
No.
No, he didn't. He said something else.
No, I said parousia, the idea of everything coming together at the end of times is called parousia, right? In classical theological
we are classically playing that into like countries that disappeared. Where did they go? It's the same thing. We're making the point that that paradox is like other countries that just disappear. You'll find very quickly that all technology or what we call tech body is running all this now. It'll change everything. And be careful. It'll rewrite your words.
I'll tell you one thing, which is very new in my... There was an article in the New York Times, which I'd have to recover now, which says that when you go on Google Maps and you do it from India, you find that Kashmir is actually Indian. But if the same day a Pakistani is looking at Kashmir, he was going to find Kashmir divided into different bits where some of them are Pakistani and some of them are Indian. How about that?
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. And the grid, the way the grid has been reworked, because here's another little element that doesn't matter that's going to come. The poles of the planet are shifting, and it's going to cause another twist that changes everything yet even again, which is a foot. But know what? Watch. Mm-hmm. Now, if you play with us long, you're going to find whatever no one is speaking about, that's what's imminent. It's everybody's talking about what's on the YouTube or the Beeb Blaster or the Boob Tube or Bob's Porn Channel. He has a Pornhub channel. You should watch it. It's delicious. You'll enjoy it. He's quite the raging star, that Bob. You know, he's the best at everything that's ever been done. Just ask him. He'll tell you all about it. But... Anyway, set that aside.
Well, anyway.
And anything.
You didn't
what
finish.
What everybody's talking about.
Let I finish here. You were just saying something about something. You were leading along. What is not talked about. What is not talked about.
Whatever's not being spoke about. Like, who's talking about global warming all of a sudden? Is it over? Did everybody die of it? Where's the regime now? Where's the money to pay for all the carbon issues? It's all but gone. Not even, it's like it's never mattered. It's like it never was. All of a sudden, you see. Because it changed.
So what's that mean?
Changed to what? That all this foolishness of whatever everybody's pushing, know that it's not that. Know that it's not that. If people realize they can get a college education, which Bob says is worthless, on a computer by the tech body, for the tech body, judged by the tech body, given a diploma by the tech body, then it doesn't mean you don't have to spend $500,000 in a loan to get that piece of paper that isn't even sheepskin anymore. If everybody can find out that you don't have to have this medicine to live and it can be all eviscerated in a matter of a second, and you don't have to come back, okay, fine. If you realize you don't have to drive across town to go to the doctor's office when you can do it on the telephone in a Zoom and have the same prescription delivered to your door, you're going to save all that bother and time of doing all that foolishness. Because the doctor isn't going to see anything different through the screen than he sees in your really life, in your life. Every visceral capacity can be gauged by the tech body better than they. Because they look at their computer to tell you what medicine to give you right now anyway and what interactions it is with the other medicines that they gave you yesterday. When you find out you can do all that and then leave in the comfort of your own delicious abode, laying in front of your tech body and the great big TV with your little black mirror and your little peapod and your little iPad and your little pickpocket and your pickpocket and all these in this series running everything and your house is taken care of. Everything is taken care of at every level. You don't have to worry. Working can wait. This is paradise, having no work to do. Because Bob said long ago, there is no money, just keep typing. If y'all keep typing, that's all you got to do. Everybody in the world sitting at home right now in lockdown, and everybody's got some food, they've got some money, they're rolling along here, and Bob's giving them some more money. Well, in America, he's giving them all $2.2 trillion. This tranche, he's working on some others. As long as Maybank don't go out of business, everybody's going to be all right, as long as Bob holds tight with it all. But that's good. He's quite generous, but he makes it so you can buy his products now. If you can't complain, you don't have any money because he's giving you some. So Bob's the only one that's going to stay with you till you buy or die. That was his promise early in the day. So now's your chance. You get a chance to see how this is going to go from here. Okay. Now, from that side, it moves into another little tiered level.
Yes, Terry.
That's the 11th Panzer. Heard the 11th Thunder.
Yes,
we just
yes.
heard the 11th
yes.
Thunder.
You're right. Correct.
Yes.
Correct.
Exactly right.
Thank you.
Exactly
thank
right.
you, Ion. I'm going to see you next week,
yeah.
I hope. I got
yeah,
a run.
Yeah.
Happy day.
You inspire
we'll
great talk.
We'll be there unless Bob's in the bunker. And then we'll miss you sorely.
All right.
That's right. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Jerry.
Thank you. Ciao.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ciao, Bella.